ॐ नमो भगवते श्रीअरुणाचलरमणाय नमस्कारम्. Today I'm going to talk about what is real seeing or knowing God as taught by Bhagavan. Most religions, or at least many religions, talk about God as the ultimate reality. So the aim of many religious people is to see or to know God. But in order to see or to know God, we first need to understand how we stand in relation to God. We see and know many things in this world. Seeing things other than ourselves is the relationship is we are the subject and the things we know are the object. The subject means the knower. The object means the things that are known. So can we see God or know God in such way? Can God be an object of knowledge? Obviously not, because if God is Satyam Jnanam Anantam, as it is said in the Upanishads, Satyam means being or reality. Jnanam means, in this context, means awareness. And Anantam means infinite. God obviously cannot be an object of knowledge. Objects are things other that the subject knows as other than itself. So the subject is ego. That all the objects we know in this world are things that seem to be other than ourselves. God obviously cannot be an object because God cannot be other than ourselves. If God was something other than ourselves, God would be limited because anything, if there's any other, then that limits the thing other than which it is. So if we were other than God, God would thereby be limited. Since God is Anantam, unlimited, infinite, God obviously cannot be something other than ourselves, and God therefore cannot be an object of knowledge. So in Upadesha Undia, when Bhagavan takes up the subject of seeing or knowing God, the first thing he establishes is what is our relationship with God, or how we stand in relation to God. What he says in verse 24 of Upadesha Undia is, Irakam ekayal isa jivagal oruporeleyaba undipara upadi unaveber undipara. That means by existing nature, God and soul are just one substance. Only adjunct awareness is different. What he means by irakam by existing nature or because of existing nature means in our real nature, which is mere being. We and God are one porul. Porul is a word, it's a Tamil word, but is more or less equivalent in meaning to the Sanskrit word vastu. In this context, the best translation of it is substance. That is what we and God essentially are, is just one thing. That one thing is our irakamiyake, our being nature. So the being of God and the being of ourself, or the existence of God and the existence of ourself, are one and the same. So what is it that makes us seem to be different from God? As Bhagavan says, upadi unuve veru. Upadi is a Sanskrit word that means something mistaken to be another thing, or a substitute, a fraud, a deception, a disguise, a false appearance, or a limitation. In other words, everything that we now mistake ourselves to be, which is not what we actually are, is called upadi. Generally, upadi is therefore translated as adjunct. So whatever we add to or superimpose upon ourselves by identifying it as I or mine, that is an adjunct. And unavu means awareness. So upadi unavu means adjunct awareness. That is what makes us seem to be different from God. So in our essential nature, in our being, we and God are just one substance. But we seem to be different from God because we identify ourselves with a set of adjuncts. And because we identify ourselves with a set of adjuncts, we also attribute certain adjuncts to God. But in the clear view of God, he sees us only as we actually are, and he sees himself as he actually is. So God sees only the one reality, the being that we actually are, whereas we see ourselves as a set of adjuncts, and therefore we see God as another set of adjuncts. This term, upādhi unavu, adjunct awareness, upādhis are things that we superimpose upon ourselves, things that we identify ourselves with. These things, basically the basic adjunct we take ourselves to be, the basic upādhi we take ourselves to be, is a body consisting of five sheaths, as Bhagavan says. What ego or jiva is the false awareness, I am this body. The heart of the jiva or ego is the pure awareness I am. That is God. The pure awareness I am is God. That is our being. That's our irakamiyake. And that is the one substance that we actually are. But we now have mixed and conflated ourselves with a set of adjuncts. So we are aware of ourselves not just as I am. We're aware of ourselves as I am this body, I am such and such a person. This body that we take to be ourself, as Bhagavan says in verse 5 of Ulajunapadu, Udul Pancha Kosa Uru, the body is a form of five sheaths. Therefore, all five are included in the term body. So when Bhagavan talks about body in this context, when he says ego is the false awareness, I have this body, what he means by body is not just the physical form of the body, but the whole set of five sheaths. That is the physical body, the prana or life that animates this body, and the mind, intellect, and will. Manamaya kosha, prana, vijnanamaya kosha, and anandamaya kosha. All these five constitute the body that we now take ourselves to be. So this body is an upadhi. Our awareness of ourself as this set of adjuncts is what Bhagavan calls upadhi unavu. Obviously, this body is just a mental fabrication, so it has no existence independent of our awareness of it. Just like the body we take ourselves to be in a dream is a mental fabrication, so also, according to Bhagavan, our present body, and indeed this whole world, is just a mental fabrication. So it has no existence independent of our awareness of it. So upādhi unavu, that is, upādhis are nothing but upādhi unavu. Upādhis are nothing but the awareness of upādhis. And the awareness, I am this set of upadis, is what is called ego. So upadhi unavu is indirectly referring to ego or jiva. That is, this jiva is this conflation of the pure awareness I am, which is our being, with this set of adjuncts, namely this body. So the only thing that makes us, what makes us seem separate from God, is this. These adjuncts that we now identify ourselves to be. If we see a rope and mistake it to be a snake, the snake is the upadhi. The substance underlying that upadhi is the rope. The rope and the snake are not two different things. In substance, they are one. They are both only a rope. The difference between the snake and the rope is only a difference in appearance. So the appearance is the imaginary snake that we have superimposed upon the rope. Likewise, this body that we now take ourselves to be, this body consisting of five sheaths, in other words, the person we now take ourselves to be, is just a fabrication, mental fabrication, but we have superimposed upon our own being. So the substance is our being, irakumiyake, as Bhagavan says. The what we take ourselves to be is the adjunct awareness. So this verse is very important, because only when we understand that in substance we and God are one, will we know how we can truly know God or see God. So in the next verse, verse 25, Bhagavan says, Tane upadi vittu ovadu, tan isan tane over unavadam undipara, tanai olivadal undipara. What that means is, knowing oneself, leaving adjuncts, is itself knowing God because of shining as oneself. That's the literal meaning. Leaving adjuncts, tanai upadi vittu, leaving means leaving aside or letting go of. In other words, ceasing to identify ourselves with adjuncts. No, so vittu, though it's an adverbial participle, it's often used by Bhagavan in the sense of without. So knowing ourselves without adjuncts, or knowing ourselves having let go of adjuncts, is itself knowing God. Why? Tanai olivadal, because of shining as oneself. Because of shining as oneself implies because God shines as ourself. That is, God is what we actually are. Only when we know ourselves without adjuncts are we truly knowing God, because God is what we actually are. So long as we know ourselves as a set of adjuncts, we seem to be something different from God. If we set aside these adjuncts and know ourselves as we actually are, that itself is knowing God, because God is what we actually are. God is what exists and shines within us as our own being, I am. So knowing the pure I am without the adjuncts, without conflation with adjuncts as I am this body, that is knowing God. So God is not an object of our, but it's not an object that we can know or see. We can know God only by being God, as Bhagavan makes clear in the next verse, verse 26, in which he says, Tanai iritale tanne aridalam. Being oneself alone is knowing oneself. Tani rendatradal, because oneself is devoid of two. Oneself is devoid of two means we are only one. So we are not two selves. One self as a subject to know the other self as an object. Self is one. We are one. So we can know ourselves only by being ourselves. How is being ourself knowing ourself? Because what we actually are is pure awareness. And pure awareness knows itself just by being itself. Awareness doesn't know itself by an act of knowing. If we know anything other than ourself, knowing anything other than ourself is a mental activity. It's a movement of our attention away from our mind or attention away from ourselves towards some other thing. And all the other things that we know are mental fabrications. So without mental activity, we cannot know anything other than ourselves. In sleep, we as ego subside. When we subside, all mental activities subside. So all other things subside along with us. It's only when we rise as ego in waking and dream, but mind comes into that, mind becomes active and produces all the things that we know. So we know other things by an act of knowledge, but we don't know ourselves by, we don't need any mental activity. We don't need any act of knowing to know ourselves. We know ourselves just by being ourselves. So when we set aside all adjuncts and know ourselves as we actually are, we are not then knowing ourselves by an act of knowing, but just by being ourselves. And since God is what shines as ourself, being ourself is knowing ourself, and which is knowing God. So in other words, if you want to see God or to know God, we need to be God. And we can be God Being God is not difficult because God is what we always actually are. Even now we are God. We seem to be something other than God only because we have identified ourselves with a set of adjuncts. So in order to know God as he actually is, all we need to do is to set aside our own adjuncts and see ourselves as we actually are, and that is seeing God as he actually is. So we can seeing God is being God. And to be God, we need to cease rising as ego. We need to cease identifying ourselves with adjuncts. So how to cease seeing ourselves as adjuncts? So long as we are looking outwards, so long as we are attending to anything other than ourselves, we experience ourselves as a set of adjuncts. As Bhagavan says in verse 4 of Ulladhu Napadu, Bhagavan says, Uruvum Tanayin, Uluhu Paramatran. If one's self is a form, the world and God will be likewise. If one's self is a form implies if we rise as ego, identifying ourselves as a body. Whenever we rise as ego, we do so by identifying ourselves as a body. As Bhagavan says in verse 25 of Ulladhu Napadu, Urupatri undam, Urupatri nekam. Grasping form, it comes into existence. Grasping form, it stands. It here being Uruvatrapeyahande, the formless demon or phantom ego. So we cannot rise or stand as ego without grasping the form of a body as ourself. As soon as we see ourselves as a form, we therefore see God and the world as forms, as things other than ourselves. Here, form doesn't just mean a physical form. Anything that is in any way distinguishable from any other thing is a form. So anything with any kind of limitations, any defining characteristics is a form. So when we limit ourselves as a form, we likewise limit God and world as separate forms. And then he goes on to say, Uruvum tan andrel, if oneself is not a form, uvatrin uruvate kan urudal yavan evan. Who can see their forms and how? So we see the world and God as forms only because we mistake ourselves to be a form. So the root problem, as Bhagavan repeatedly emphasized, is mistaking ourselves to be a form. And the form we mistake ourselves to be, as he says in the next verse, Udal Pancha Kosodu, the form, the body is a form of five sheaves. So we mistake ourselves to be this form of five sheaves called body. And consequently, we see the world and God as a multitude of forms. So if you want to see God or the world as it actually is, we need to see ourselves as we actually are. We need to see ourselves without forms. So we need to cease grasping form and we need instead to grasp ourselves. What happens when we try to grasp ourselves? As Bhagavan says in verse 25 of Ulladhu Tadinal otum pidicum. If seeking, it takes flight. This is referring to ego. If seeking here, Bhagavan doesn't say what is to seek what, but the implication is if ego seeks itself, if the ego seeks to know what it actually is, if it seeks its own reality, it will take flight. In other words, it will subside and dissolve back into its source. So to see God, we need to see what God actually is, or to see God as he actually is, we need to see ourselves as we actually are. And to see ourselves as we actually are, we need to cease rising as ego by attending not to anything other than ourselves, but to ourself alone. So this subject of seeing God that Bhagavan dealt with so succinctly and clearly in Upadesha Undia, he also deals with it in various ways in Ulladhu Napadu. In verse 24 of Upadesha Undia, he said, but he said, Irkam Ikeyal Isaji Virgal Oru Porale Ava, in by being nature or God and soul are just one polo. What he means by polo, he explains or he defines what he means by polo in verse 7 of Uludhunapattu. What he says in verse 7 of Uludhunapattu is, Uluhu arivum ondrai uditu odungum enum, Uluhu arivu tannal olirum. Here he's using word arivu, which means awareness, but he's talking about the awareness that rises and subsides. The awareness that arises and subsides is not the real awareness, but only mind. So in this context, arivu, though it means awareness in this context in the sense of mind. So though the world and mind rise and subside, ondrai means in this context, ondrai means as one, it means simultaneously in this context. Though the world and God arise and subside simultaneously, Uluhu arivu tannal orirum. The world shines only by the mind. That is, the world is an object that exists only in the view of the mind. Mind here means ego, the knowing aspect of the mind is ego. That is, as Bhagavan clarified in verse 18 of Upadesha Undia, enengale manam, thoughts alone of a mind. Yavinum nanenum enname mulamam undipara, yanam manam enal undipara. That means thoughts alone of a mind. Of all, meaning of all thoughts, the thought called I alone is the root. The thought called I is ego. Why is ego the root of all other thoughts? Because all other thoughts are objects, whereas ego is the subject. The objects exist only in the view of the subject. So there cannot be any other thought. Thoughts appear only in the view of ego. So without ego, no other thought can exist. So though ego is a thought, it's a thought unlike all other thoughts, because all other thoughts are jada, devoid of awareness, whereas ego is the only thought that is endowed with awareness, because as Bhagavan explained in verse 24 of Uludhunapattu, ego is what is called chit jada granti. Chit means awareness, here referring to satchit, the pure awareness I am. Jada means what is devoid of awareness, and granti means not. So the not formed by the entanglement of awareness with what is not awareness. In other words, this false awareness, I am this body, in which I am is chit and this body is jada, that conflated awareness, which is ego, is what is called chit jada granti. So ego is the only thought that is endowed with awareness. Since ego is endowed with awareness, and all other thoughts are devoid of awareness, the world, which is nothing but thoughts, as Bhagavan says in Nana, for example, in verse 14, sorry, I mean, the 14th paragraph, towards the end, he says, Jagam embadu neneve, what is called the world is only thought. So the all other, all thoughts exist only in the view of, and that the world is nothing but thoughts, all those thoughts exist only in the view of ego. So he says, the world shines only by arivu, by awareness, meaning ego or mind. But then the important point that I'm coming to here is the next sentence in which he says, Uluhu arivu tondri marivadaku idanai tondri mariadu olirum pundrum am achte porol. He defines here what he means by porol. That is, only that which shines without appearing and disappearing as the place for the appearing and disappearing of the world and arivu, means awareness in the sense of ego or mind, is porol, which is pundram. Pundram is a Tamil form of the Sanskrit word purna, means whole. Whole in the sense that it is the totality of all, it's the infinite whole. So, but when Bhagavan talks about Poro in verse 24 of Ulaganapu, saying that in being nature, we and God are just one Poro, that Poro is the ultimate substance which shines without appearing or disappearing as the place for the appearing and disappearing of the world and mind. So this is what Bhagavan means by Poro. So in the next verse, verse 8, he takes up the subject of how to see this Poro, how to see or know this Poro. This verse 8 is a very, very beautiful verse. What he says in this verse is, "Epeya itu evuruvil etinum a pe uruvil apporole kanvari adu." That means, whoever worships in whatever form, giving whatever name, that is the way to see that Poro in name and form. That is, we Poro is the Poro that Bhagavan is referring to is the reality of ourself and God. But because we limit ourselves as a body, we take ourselves to be a form, so we take God also to be a form. And so we worship God in form and give him a we attribute a form and a name to God. So whoever worships God in whatever form, giving whatever name, that is the way to see that substance, that Poro, in name and form. The words peruruvil have been variously interpreted in this context. The most appropriate meaning for peruruvil in this context is in name and form. That is, per means name, uru means form. Il is the locative case ending, so seeing in name and form. This is contrasted with the next sentence in which he talks about unmeyil karnal. Unmeyil karnal means seeing in truth. In other words, seeing as it actually is. So there are two ways to see that substance, either to see it in name and form or to see it as it actually is. However, peruruvil can also be interpreted in two other ways. One is to take it as to mean per uruvilada. A per uruvilada means without name and form, or nameless and formless. So that reality, that Poro, is nameless and formless. There's no dispute about that. It is nameless and formless. But by worshipping in name and form, is that the way to see it? Without name and form? No, it's the way to see it in name and form. Per uruvil, besides meaning in name and form or nameless and formless, can also be taken to mean per uruvilamal or per uruviladu, in which case it would mean without name and form. This is how some people have interpreted this verse. But that is, some people take it to mean whoever worships in whatever form, giving whatever name, that is the way to see that Poro without name and form. That is not a correct meaning. Firstly, because that meaning doesn't fit with the second sentence, because he begins the second sentence with the word ayinum and goes on to talk about what is unmeyil karnal, what is seeing in truth. So there's a contrast between these two sentences. That's why he uses the word ayinum, which means however. So the only reasonable interpretation is to take this peruruvil, it doesn't mean without name and form, it means in name and form. Of course, that reality in its true nature is nameless and formless. There's no dispute about that. The point is, what is Bhagavan talking about here in the first sentence? Is he talking about seeing it in name and form or seeing it without name and form? Well, the logical meaning to take is worshipping in name and form is the way to see it in name and form. However, as he goes on to say in the next sentence, ayinum, ammei porolin unmeil tan unmeine ondu odungi ondrudele unmeil karnal una. That means, however, investigating the reality of oneself, dissolving in the reality of that true substance, becoming one alone is seeing in reality. So if we want to see that Porul as it actually is, we need to investigate the reality of ourself in order to see ourself without adjuncts, as he says in verse 25 of Upadeshundia. We need to investigate the reality of ourself, and thereby investigating the reality of ourself, we will thereby dissolve in the reality of that true Porul, that Maporul. Maporul means that real Porul. And we will thereby become one with it. And that alone is seeing in reality. In other words, again, Bhagavan is emphasizing here, but being that is seeing that. In order to see that, we need to be it. And in order to be it, we need to investigate the reality of ourselves and dissolve in the reality of that true substance. Another way in which this second sentence is also slightly misinterpreted in some translations. Some translations say, seeing the investigating the reality of oneself in the reality of that real substance. We are not to see our own reality in the reality of that, but they're not two different realities. That is, in Tamil verses, the verses often are not, the order of words in the verse is often not the usual prose order. So in order to interpret some verses correctly, we have to do what is called anvayam. Anvayam means to rearrange the words in a logical prose order. So if we do anvayam of the second sentence, it is tan unmayene ondu. That ondu means investigating or knowing. So investigating and knowing one's own reality. Anmeporulin unmail odungi ondrudale. Merging or subsiding in the reality of that real substance. That alone is seeing in truth. So what he refers to here is that Maporul, that real substance, that is the reality, the substance of God and ourselves, what we actually are. That is the one Porul that Bhagavan referred to in verse 24 of Uludunabdu when he said, God and soul, by being nature, Irikamikayal, God and soul are just one substance. So in order to know that one substance in truth, in other words, in order to know it or to see it as it actually is, we need to investigate and know our own reality and thereby subside and become one with the reality of that, subside in the reality of that and become one with it. That is seeing it in truth. In other words, seeing ourselves alone is seeing ourselves as we actually are, alone is seeing God as he actually is. That is, Bhagavan is repeatedly emphasizing the same point. So worshipping in name and form is good, but that's only a way to see him in name and form. That's a good way, that's good as a practice of devotion. But as Bhagavan says in verse 8 of Upadeshundia, rather than meditating on God as something other than ourselves, the best is to meditate on him as not other than ourselves, with the understanding that he is I. That is, anya bhavatin abhanahamahum ananya bhavame undipara anetimun utumum undipara. Anya bhavam means meditate, in this context, it means meditating on what is other. That implies meditating on God as if he was something other than ourselves. In other words, meditating on God in name and form. Rather than that, ananya bhava, meditating on him as not other than ourselves, with the understanding that he is I, abhanahamahum, that is anetinam utumam, that is the best among all. So though Bhagavan wasn't opposed to worship in name and form, that is appropriate as a practice in the path of bhakti. But Better than worshipping God in name and form, as if he was something other than ourselves, to recognize that he is what is shining in our heart as I, and to meditate on him as none other than ourselves, that is the best among all. So the first sentence of this verse is talking about meditating on God in name and form. Meditate, that is, worshiping him in name and form. If we worship him in name and form or meditate on him in name and form, that is the way to see him in name and form. But if we want to see him as he actually is, we need to investigate the reality of ourself. And in other words, we need to see what we actually are, and thereby we will subside and merge in the reality of God and become one with him, and that is seeing him in truth. Bhagavan again takes up the subject of seeing God in verses 20, 21, and 22 of Aluddhanapattu. What he says in verse 20 is, "Karnam tane vittu, tan kadvale karnal, karnam manamayamam kakshi." What that means is, leaving oneself who sees, oneself seeing God is seeing a mental vision. When he says, karnam tane vittu, leaving oneself who sees, that means instead of turning our attention within and holding on to ourselves, leaving ourselves and looking for God outside, seeing God outside as something other than ourselves, is seeing a mental vision, a manamayamam kakshi. So if we worship God in name and form, we will see him in name and form, but that is just a manamayamam kakshi. So how to see God as he actually is? The next sentence is a very, very beautiful sentence in Tamil. Bhagavan is using one of his favorite words in Tamil, which is tan, and various forms of word tan. Tan means oneself. But here in this sentence, he's using this word oneself to refer both to ourself as we actually are and to ourself as ego. So if we the sentence is tanne karnam avan tan kadval kan danam tan mudle poi tan kadval andri illadal. If we translate it literally, that sentence means only one who sees oneself, the origin of oneself, is one who has seen God. Because the origin, oneself, going, oneself is not other than God. So we have to unpack this a little to understand what he's referring to with these various, when he's talking about oneself. When he says only one who sees oneself, the origin of oneself, means only one who sees the reality of oneself, only one who sees themselves as they actually are, and that what we actually are is the origin of ourself as ego. So seeing oneself, the origin of oneself, seeing what we actually are, which is the origin of ourself as ego, is one who has seen God. Because the origin, here he's using origin to refer to ego, because ego is the root. He's using the same word, mudal, but whereas in the previous verse, in the previous clause, well, not yeah. In the previous clause, he's talking about what he refers to as the origin of oneself is what we actually are. But here he's referring to the origin as meaning the root, ego, because the origin oneself going, that means because ego, which is the root of everything else, the origin of everything else, when that goes, then without ego, what we actually are is not other than God. So essentially, he's saying the same here thing here, but he's saying it, but he's said in Upadesha Undia. In Upadesha Undia, he said it particularly clearly. Here, he's saying it in a very subtle way. But why he says it in this way? People may say, "Oh, this is just confusing. Why to say it in such a confusing way?" He expresses it in this way in order to make us stop and think to understand what he's saying. So But if we go through it clause by clause, this sentence, tanne karnam avan, he who sees himself, or one who sees oneself, tan kadavale kandanam, is one who has seen God. That's the main clause that comes first, because it, as I say in Tamil, often the clauses, the order of words in a Tamil verse are not the normal logical prose order. Tan mudale means the source of oneself. Tan mudalpoi, the source or origin, oneself going. Tan kadaval indri illadal. Oneself is not other than God, or God is not other than oneself. We can take it either way. So the implication of this sentence is only one who sees one's real nature, which is the origin of ego, is one who has seen God, because the origin, namely ego, going, when an ego goes, oneself is not other than God. And then in verse 21, he says, he starts by asking a question. He poses a question. Tanne tan kano, palevan tanne kano, enum palanul unme. Enne, that means if one asks, or if it is asked, what is the truth of many texts that say oneself seeing oneself, seeing God? That is, two things he's talking about here. That is, many texts talk about oneself seeing God, or they talk about seeing God. So two things he's talking about here: oneself seeing oneself and seeing God. So what is the truth of all these many texts that talk about oneself seeing oneself, or oneself seeing God? The answer he gives is, tanne tan karnal evan tan ondral. That means, since oneself is one, how is oneself to see oneself? That is, we can't see ourselves as an object. So seeing ourself is not a subject seeing an object. It's not seeing in that sense. So how is oneself to, since we are one, how can we see ourself? It's a question. And then he goes on to say, kana onandeo, if it is not possible to see, that implies if it's not possible for us to see ourselves, talevan karnal evan, how to see God? If we can't even see ourselves, how can we see God? That is the question. And the beautiful answer he gives, the last sentence, is unadal khan. Unadal khan literally means becoming food is seeing. So what does he mean by becoming food? That is, we cannot see God as an object. We cannot see ourselves as an object. God is the reality of ourself, as he said in the previous verse. So how to see God, or how to see what we really are? We can see it only by becoming food. That is, only when God swallows us, in other words, as he said in verse 8, when we investigate ourselves, when we investigate the reality of ourself, in other words, when we investigate the reality of ego, what we actually are, we will thereby merge in that real substance and become one with it. And that is seeing in truth, he said in verse 8. He implies the same here. Only when we merge and become one with that, when we as ego are completely swallowed by God, then that alone is true seeing. So he's saying the same thing in all these verses, but he's expressing it in different ways. But this is a very, very important, I mean, these three words, unadal khan, if we understand the meaning of these words, they're such important words. We cannot see God or know God as something other than ourselves. If we truly want to see God or know God, there is a small price to be paid. That small price is that we have to be swallowed by him. In other words, we need to be willing to surrender ourselves completely. Without surrendering ourselves completely, losing ourselves completely in God, we cannot know God as he actually is. So true seeing is becoming food to him, in other words, being swallowed by him. And then in verse 22, he wraps it all up and emphasizes the practical import of all these teachings. The whole of verse 22, except for the last word is mati, which means consider, but the whole of the rest is one question. It's a rhetorical question. That is what he asks is, what he says in this verse is, mati koli tandu, amati kul olirum, patiine ulle madaki, patil padititel andri, patie matial madititel engan. Again, here we need to do anveyam, because otherwise this implies amatikul olirum matine, the mind which shines in that mind, that doesn't make sense. What it means is God who shines in that mind. So we have to rearrange the order of words as matikoli tandu, amatikul olirum patiil, matine ulle madaki, padititel andri, patie matial, madititel engan, mati. That means, except by turning the mind back within, completely immersing it in God, who shines within that mind, giving light to the mind, how to fathom God by the mind. That is, the main thing is, except by completely immersing the mind in God, who shines in the mind, giving light to the mind, how to fathom God by the mind. How to completely immerse the mind in God? By turning the mind back within. That is, matiene ulle madaki means, madaki literally means folding, like you fold a cloth, folding the mind back within. In other words, turning the mind back within, except by turning the mind back within and thereby completely immersing it in God is the implication, who shines within that mind, giving light to the mind, how to fathom God by the mind. What does he mean by saying God shines within the mind, giving light to the mind? God is the pure awareness I am. That pure awareness is the original light of awareness. The mind has no light of awareness of its own. It borrows its light of awareness from that original light, the pure awareness I am. But when the mind borrows that light, though it borrows that light from its source, instead of using that light to know the source from which it gets light, it uses that light to face outwards and see the things in the world. If you're standing in the sunlight and you have a mirror, you can hold the mirror in such a way, but the light from the sun is directed into a dark cave. If you direct the light from the sun into the dark cave, you'll be able to see the objects of the cave. We are like that. We are using this light, which comes from the pure awareness I am. Light here means the light of awareness. We're using the light of awareness to know the objects of the world. This is like using the light, the reflected light of the sun, to know the objects in the cave. But instead of shining the light reflected from a mirror into the cave, what happens if we turn that mirror back to face the sun? Then the light reflected from the sun merges back into the sun light. Likewise, if we, instead of allowing our mind to face outwards to know the things of the world, if we turn our mind back within to see the light of awareness that is ever shining in our heart as our own being, I am, that is the only means to know God as he actually is, to fathom God by the mind. Obviously, this verse is a rhetorical question, but the obvious meaning of the obvious implication of this rhetorical question, how to fathom God by them, and when he says, except by turning the mind back within, completely immersing it within God, in God who shines within that mind, giving light to the mind, how to fathom God by the mind. What he implies here is we cannot know God by the mind by any other means except by turning our mind back within and thereby completely immersing it in God, who shines within that mind, giving light to the mind. Completely immersing it in God is like if you, instead of shining the, directing the reflected light from the mirror into the cave, if you direct it back to the sunlight, then the light reflected from the mirror merges in the sunlight. It gets lost in the sunlight. You don't need the light of a mirror to see, to know the sun. So we have to, our mind, which we are now misusing to know things outside ourselves, we need to turn that mind back within and to let it, thereby let immerse it in the light that is ever shining in our heart as our own being. That is the only way to know God. So in all these verses, Bhagavan is implying the same thing, but the only way to know God is for us to cease rising as ego by identifying ourselves with adjuncts. Instead of rising as ego by identifying ourselves as adjuncts, we need to turn our attention back within to investigate and know ourselves as we actually are. To the extent to which we turn our attention back within, the adjuncts will drop off because the adjuncts are not holding on to us. We are holding on to the adjuncts. So the adjuncts, Bhagavan often used to say, we complain that we are in bondage, but nothing is binding us. We are binding ourselves by holding on to the things of the world, by holding on to this body and the things of the world. All we have to do to free ourselves from this bondage is to let go of these external things and turn our mind back within and thereby merge back into the source. But in Guru Vacha Kavaya, I think if I remember correctly, there's a verse in which Bhagavan says, but people who are afraid to let go of the body and mind are like someone who is standing on the ground and holding on to a branch above their head, saying, I can't let go of this branch. If I let go of the branch, I'll fall. If we let go of the branch, we're always standing on solid ground. We don't need to hold on to the branch. Likewise, we do not need to hold on to this body and mind. We hold on to this body and mind as if our very survival depends upon it. But if we have the courage, if we have the faith in Bhagavan's words, we will let go of this body and mind, and turn back within to cling to our own being, I am. And by turning our mind back within, we will thereby immerse it completely in God, who is the light that shines within the mind. And thereby we will merge and become one with God. So in all these verses, he's saying the same thing. We need to let go of the adjunct that we are now clinging to as I and know ourselves as we actually are. So instead of clinging to the adjuncts, we need to cling to ourselves. By clinging to ourselves, we will thereby subside and merge back into God, as he says in the second sentence of verse 8. He says it beautifully. Aenum tanunmeye ondu, investigating or knowing, or investigating and knowing. Ondu means both investigating and knowing. Investigating and knowing one's own reality. Tanunmeye ondu. Unmeyene ondu, ammeporalin unmeyil odungi, merging or subsiding in the reality of that meporal, ondrutale, becoming one with it, unmeyil kanal, that alone is seeing in truth. In other words, unadal kan, becoming food to him is seeing. And in order to become food to him, we need to turn our attention back within and merge back into the source from which we have risen. This is what Bhagavan's teachings are all about. That is, though he's expressed it in so many ways in Uludunapdu, Padeshundia, Anmavide, Aksharamlai, Navamani Malai Patikam, Ashtakam, Pancharatnam, all these works, Bhagavan is repeatedly, in so many ways, emphasizing we need to let go of everything external. And what is the way to know the truth? Tirambi aham, dinam aha, tane dinam aha kankan, terium, endranayen arunachala. Bhagavan sings in Aksharam like, Tirumbi aham means turning within, turning back within. Tane dinam aha kankan. Tane means oneself. Dinam literally means daily, but it implies always. Ahakan, the inner eye, seeing ourselves with the inner eye. The inner eye means the power of attention, turning our attention back within to see ourselves. Terium, it will be known. So the way to know God, the way to see God, is a way to know and see ourselves as we actually are, because God is what we actually are. And the way is to turn within and constantly see ourselves with the inner eye. In other words, constantly attend to ourselves. That this is the path of Atmavichara. This is the true path of surrender, as Bhagavan made clear. It's only, as he says in the first sentence of the 13th paragraph of Nana, Anma Chintane Tavira, Vera Chintane Kalamba Vidaku, Satram Idam Kodamal, Apmanishta Paranai Iripade, Pane Isunaku Alepadam. Being Apmanishta Paran, being one who is firmly established as oneself. In other words, being as we actually are, giving not even the slightest room to raising any other thought except Atmachintana. Atmachintana means thought of oneself. In other words, self-attentiveness. That alone is giving ourselves to God. So this is the path of Atmavichara and the path of Atmasamapanam taught by Bhagavan. Om Namo Bhagavate Sri Arunachala Ramanaya.